Ukrainians wonder if there's a double standard. An international community that comes together to stand down Iran can't up its air defense commitments in time to defend against Russian airstrikes, like the one that took out the Tripilska thermal power station last week. We'll ask if Volodymyr Zelensky is correct and whether EU leaders gathered at a summit in Brussels need to treat Iran and Russia as one single common foe, particularly seeing how close the pair have drawn in the past 2 years. On that score, how seriously should we take talk of new sanctions against regimes that have long mastered the art of dodging them? Today in the France 24 debate, how to defend the skies over Ukraine. Joining us from Brussels, France 24 correspondent Dave Keating. Good to see you, Dave.
Good to be with you, Francois.
And Sophie Pornschlager, director of studies at the Europe Jacques Delors think tank. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
Your reactions on the hashtag F24debate. While EU leaders gather in Brussels, Ukraine this Wednesday, counting the dead. At least 17 killed, dozens injured in the northern city of Chernihiv as Russian missiles rained down shortly after 9 a.m. local time. Antonia Kerrigan has more.
Smoke rose on the Chernihiv skyline after three Russian missiles hit a central neighborhood on Wednesday morning, reducing to rubble an eight-story block of flats.
Yeah.
There are civilians who have been killed and many more wounded.
First responders dug through the blood-stained rubble in search of survivors, while medics were on hand to provide care. This comes only days after Volodymyr Zelensky told US news channel PBS that Ukraine had recently exhausted its reserves of air defense missiles. This at a time when the US military aid package has been stalled for several months in Congress. The Ukrainian president reacted to the Chernihiv attack, striking a reproachful note on Telegram.
This would not have happened if Ukraine had received sufficient air defense equipment and if the world's determination to counter Russian terror had been sufficient.
And when British, French and Jordanian forces helped Israel shoot down the 300 drones and missiles fired by Iran on Saturday night, Zelensky subtly lambasted his allies' failure to go to those same lengths for Ukraine. This as Russia advances slowly along the 1,000-kilometer front line and the Ukrainian army face munition and troop shortages.
Dave Keating, that EU summit underway. I'm hearing lots of talk about sanctions, not so much about missiles.
Yes, exactly. I mean, what's been interesting to see is that in the run-up to the summit, when I've talked to EU national officials about how much attention Ukraine was going to get at the summit, I got a very consistent answer, which was, we dealt with Ukraine in March. We really have to talk about what happened over the weekend. And so what they're going to be talking about is what the foreign affairs ministers initially discussed in a video conference last night, which is expanding the sanctions regime against Iran. The thing is, the EU only just recently put in sanctions against Iran for providing drones to Russia, which Russia has been using to attack Ukraine. Of course, Iran also used drones to attack Israel, but in addition, they used missiles. So there is this talk, or there was this talk last night at least, about expanding that sanctions regime to missiles. That's what they'll be talking about here tonight. However, I understand that's more complicated than it might seem. The honest truth is there just aren't a whole lot of good options here for the EU in terms of sanctioning Iran, A, because it's already pretty heavily sanctioned, B, because the nuclear proliferation deal, that the JCPOA, is kind of dead at the moment, and C, because Russia can help out Iran, even if the EU tries to hurt Iran with sanctions. So whatever they talk about tonight, I don't think there's a big feeling that this is going to make much of a difference.
Sophie Pornschlager, how does it make you feel when all these promises from all the EU leaders heading into the summit about more sanctions?
Well, it's true what just Dave said, is that Iran is already quite heavily sanctioned, and it's one of the instruments that the EU can use. Unfortunately, the EU is not a strong geopolitical power for now. It doesn't have that many other instruments in its toolbox. So there aren't that many options for the EU as you know, the political system. The national countries, of course, the governments can take decisions. And I think one of the best options would definitely be to isolate Iran further and to make sure that the axis between Russia and Iran is divided. And that requires a long-term geopolitical strategy that is not there yet. And Russia and Iran are clearly profiting from the fact that the EU is quite fragmented and that it doesn't have that kind of, you know, cohesive strategy on how to deal with Iran and especially with Russia as well.
How could that you? Said, how could you? How could you that, divide? How could you fragment Russia and Iran?
That is a very good question. I think that would require long-term thinking, and that's what I wish to see at EU level. At the moment, we're very much in this crisis respond mode and not so much that long-term thinking about what, you know, a real EU diplomacy would be. What I also wanted to say is that we should definitely focus more on Russia than on Iran, because let's be honest, that's the bigger threat also from a geographical perspective. It's very important to remember that, of course, we have conventional warfare in Ukraine, but we also have a cyber and a disinformation war that is happening within the EU, that is very much happening, you know, from Russia's perspective right before the European elections. And that is also a sort of war. So I think that's the bigger threat for us than Iran at the moment. But in the broader geopolitical perspective, of course, we also need to look at Iran. I would just be careful to kind of make sure that we have our geographical priorities right as well.
And do you agree with the Ukrainians that there is a double standard when it comes to doing more to stop missiles and drones coming from Iran hitting Israel than there is to stop Russian missiles and drones hitting Ukraine?
Well, I think, yes, there is a double standard in the sense that you could see that Germany, you know, clearly helped Israel to defend itself against the Iranian attack. It was very reluctant to do so with Ukraine. Of course, the EU did help. We did have like the Ukraine aid package of $50 billion going through. But especially with the aid package from the US being stuck in Congress because of Republicans and the US elections coming up in November, there is a real need for Europe to be very united when it comes to supporting Ukraine, because we will have to support it further. It doesn't look good on the front. Ukraine, you know, seems to be losing that battle. And we also have a question on ammunition, on air and missile defense, and also a question of industrial policy and budget, because that will be expensive for Europe. So we really need to kind of think a bit more long term when it comes to how we can support Ukraine.
Well, let's see if we can reassure you, Sophie, about priorities inside of Europe. NATO once again staging military maneuvers in the Baltic states this Wednesday. In Latvia, we can see images of five Eurofighter Typhoon jets from the German Air Force conducting air policing exercises. Germany, which has launched an appeal, what it calls an immediate action on air defense initiative. It's the equivalent of that Czech-led initiative to provide more ammunition for Ukraine. Germany's written to dozens of countries, including Gulf Arab states, to plead for more air defense systems for Ukraine. Last Saturday, the Germans pledged more Patriot missile systems for Ukraine, but still remain reluctant, Dave Keating, when it comes to providing Taurus missiles, which carry a range of 500 kilometers, thus would just give Kyiv an ability to strike deep inside of Russian territory. Dave, this German initiative that's being announced the same day this EU summit is happening, how big of a deal is it?
Well, this is something that Ukraine has been asking for a really long time. And the reason for the hesitation is the West has been very, very wary of engaging in direct confrontation, direct war with Russia. And there was always the chance, if you establish this missile defense system, that it could lead to a direct West or NATO-Russia conflict. This movement from Germany, which has been one of the most hesitant, is very significant. Certainly the Eastern EU countries are very glad to see it. However, they still seem to have a lot of reservations. And I think the key question is, behind closed doors here, how hard will Chancellor Scholz actually push for this tonight? How much is he actually pushing other countries to provide this kind of air defense system? On President Zelensky's point, when he's asking Europe, how come you can provide this missile shield for Israel against Iran, but you won't provide it for us against Russia? I think it's a perfectly legitimate question, but it also has a perfectly simple and legitimate answer. Russia is a nuclear power. Iran is not yet a nuclear power. A direct confrontation with Russia could very easily lead to World War III. That is what you keep hearing here. And that's why I think it's fairly obvious why the West can confront Iran in a way that they can't directly confront Russia.
We heard other statements, Dave. The Germans spoke this Wednesday about this air defense initiative. And very quickly, you had countries like the Czech Republic volunteering to say they'd like to help coordinate this somehow. We also heard the NATO Secretary General saying if it's a choice right now between boosting your own air defenses or helping Ukraine, opt for helping Ukraine. Dave Keating, do you get the sense this is, remember, an informal summit that you're at, that this is being called because there's an urgency that we haven't felt before when it comes to Ukraine?
Yes. Well, it's hard to say because, again, I think people were kind of putting away any expectations of significant movement here on Ukraine. So if we do get some kind of announcement about air defenses, it will be on the sidelines. What we're expecting in terms of the conclusions here is a very, very short section on Ukraine. This summit was actually, it essentially was a delayed conversation that was supposed to happen last month at the March summit about economic competitiveness. I don't think we're going to get a lot of headlines about that. There was this big report that was delivered to leaders today. They're going to discuss it tomorrow. But of course, the situation in the Middle East kind of overtook that discussion. So you already have the Middle East overtaking the discussion they were intending to have. And so certainly they don't really have room for a third conversation. But that is frustrating a lot of people because, as Sophie just pointed out, the EU has a lot more relevance and power when it comes to the Ukraine-Russia conflict. And if they spend hours and hours tonight debating small changes in text about what they're going to say about calling for restraint for Israel, the problem is no one in Israel is listening to the EU, and nobody cares what words they use about calling for restraint or not. That will be up to the United States. So there's a lot of people saying, look, tonight you should really be focused on the conflict where you do have power, where you are relevant, and where you can make a big difference with those air defense systems, and that is the Ukraine conflict.
Sophie Bunschlagel, again, this question of the Tauruses, of those German-made long-range missiles, comes up. Right now, what's the conversation inside Germany?
Well, that's a good question. I think what we see here is, once again, kind of conflicts between the government coalition, where the Social Democrats are extremely reluctant. I think Scholz is clearly more on the restraint to give more help to Ukraine, whereas in the foreign ministry with Annalena Baerbock, she seems to be more willing to go forward. At least that's my reading of it. I think it's a good thing already that we saw that they sent some Patriot systems and will be sending one more, as far as I understood, with the Taurus missiles, because they go beyond the front line. I think that's the main issue. But all in all, it's a question of whether we want to defend Ukraine, yes or no. And I think looking at the situation on the ground, there is a clear need for a very united European response that supports Ukraine, not only in terms of the economy and humanitarian aid, but also militarily. And that means more ammunition. That also means missile and air defense. And if there is a coalition, you know, the immediate action on air defense, which is this new initiative launched by Germany, I think that's a very positive thing. The question, of course, is like how you move forward with that. And I think, as I mentioned, the most important points are getting help now, but also making sure that we have the production capacities. And I think that's something moving forward where Europe really needs to invest and look more clearly at where we are. On that point, there's two really dangerous things happening. The first one is that Germany's not really cooperating with France that much. You know, they're once again doing their petty fights. Germany saying that France should spend more money to help Ukraine, and Germany asking for rebates at the European Peace Facility, for instance. So this really needs to be overcome to make sure that we have a united European response and that we are able to support Ukraine. You know, whether we will see Taurus missiles, it's a question. I think we've seen some movement also within the Chancellery, so it's up to them to decide. You know, yeah, it's not an easy decision.
You mentioned at the outset of our conversation about how it's also a hybrid war. There's a lot of disinformation campaigns. We're less than 2 months out from European elections. And yet, Sophie, when you look at public opinion in Germany, in France, and in other places similar, people are squarely behind Ukraine. And even the far right here in France, for instance, is hesitant before coming out with positions that are openly pro-Russian.
Yes, well, let's not forget that a lot of the far-right parties before the war in the Russian aggression war in Ukraine were funded by Russia or had links to Russia. So this is a very convenient positioning for them now. But all in all, they weren't very, very, you know, they were quite Russian-friendly beforehand. And second, also do have Hungary with Mr. Orbán still in the EU. Thirdly, we saw also a cyber attack in Estonia. And the issue is that we are being undermined by Russia in terms of corruption, in terms of cybersecurity, in terms of disinformation, also with Voice for Europe, you know, being seen as a Russian-funded media outlet in the end. So this is really something we need to look at and to really defend ourselves, not only when it comes to defense, but to have a secure Asian concept that also makes sure that we defend our democratic standards, that we make sure that, you know, we have another Qatargate in the European Parliament, and that our decision makers are truly defending the European interest and not, you know, funded by Russia. So that's something we definitely need to look at much more.
Dave Keating, as the campaign for the European elections heads into the home stretch, is it going to script when it comes to Ukraine?
I think it is going to script. Actually, it's been remarkable to me to observe the difference in public perception about the Ukraine war between Europe and America, both in terms of the attitude of Republicans in Congress, but also public polling bears out that Americans are a lot less concerned about this war, and they're much more pro-Russia than Europeans in general. And that's probably because Europeans feel the threat from Russia much more acutely than Americans. You are seeing those far-right parties like Marine Le Pen, who had taken Russian money in the past, Matteo Salvini in Italy, they've backed off those positions. They are not entering this election on June 9th with the platform of let's defund the Ukrainian war. We're getting a few, Viktor Orban is on that platform, but really we're not seeing very much of that. Whereas in the US, you are absolutely seeing that from Donald Trump, from congressional Republicans who are still blocking U.S. aid to Ukraine. So for the moment, I think the public support for supporting Ukraine in Europe is holding firm, much firmer than in America. And that's certainly not being seen as a winning issue to enter the EU election with in June.
The EU election in June, is anybody where you're standing, Dave, holding their breath as that $60 billion Ukraine aid package finally gets a look in at the U.S. House of Representatives?
We'll see. People are very closely watching that, because if that money doesn't come, Europe is very unsure whether they can continue funding this conflict on their own. I think there's, you know, President Macron is talking a big game about Europe being able to do this. The truth is, if the U.S. pulls all support for Ukraine, it's very unlikely that Europe could continue in Ukraine's defense, and Ukraine would have to surrender to Russia within a certain amount of time. They need that money. If that money is already blocked even before Trump would enter the White House, it's a very bad sign. So people are holding their breath for sure. I don't think I haven't heard anyone feeling very positive about it. Nobody's feeling very positive about the U.S. Congress these days. However, they would be delighted to see it.
We'll have to leave it there. Dave Keating, I want to thank you so much for joining us from Brussels. Sophie Pornschlagel, also from the Belgian capital. There's more on that EU summit on our website, France24.com.